My colleagues of most of my academic life and fellow students. My wife and I can not come to this campus without a good deal of emotion and appreciation. Because anything we may have done for the institution is very small indeed in comparison for what the institution has done for us and our family and our friends. I noticed by the announcements of the president that the institution has not mended its ways in being really the richest center I know of in the world. For those many interesting and cultural activities which are found in a great educational institution. And when I say the best in the world, I speak with some authority, having visited most of the colleges of America and many of the most important ones of foreign countries. And as a result of this, I can say that I know of no other place where there are so many diverse and interesting and worthwhile cultural activities. Take this Boston Symphony concert that's coming soon. I think I can say that the most sophisticated musical performance I have ever attended was a concert of the Boston Symphony Orchestra at the time that Harvard University was celebrating its, I believe it's the 300th anniversary of its founding. And the highlight of that great week celebration was the concert of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. Every student should plan to attend, whether he likes music or not, to put that on his record, to make a, to sort of file a notch on his six-shooter butt of things that he has attended that come in the high mark of refined entertainment. Just 50 years ago, that I came to this institution as a freshman. And I am asked to speak to you about what I would do if I were entering college. Now I want to just think things over with you a little bit. Not very much. I'm fortunate in having a little more than the time that was allotted to the Monday speaker for many years here. He always had 4 minutes. I have many times 4 minutes. The time is brief, however, and I want to try to focus your interest on what would be the important things to think about if you were entering college. I have a vivid memory of that 50 years ago. At this time of year, I was corresponding around to various educational institutions throughout the nation. It made very little difference where I went. I had to travel several hundred miles in any case. And I obtained catalogs and information and letters from colleges throughout the United States, particularly those in this state. And I remember the categories that I had in mind when I thought of choosing a college. I was a little bit like the man who was buying an automobile that they told about in a show. After he looked around a little, he said, I'll take the Buick. I like the horn the best. He had a very unimportant reason for choosing this particular car. Well, students likely have that sort of thing in choosing colleges. I remember that one of the institutions of which I had literature had a picture showing a section of a museum in which they had a deer that had some beautiful horns on. And since I had been out hunting recently and had bagged a deer with more bigger horns than this particular deer, I was almost to go to that college so that I could go into that museum and tell them that I'd shot a deer that had more horns than that, bigger horns than that college had on. And that would have been the greatest mistake I could have made in view of more recent developments in colleges. Another thing that was of no great importance was one of these schools had some athletic teams on. And it happened that just a few weeks before I had outrun anybody in our little town, and so I was thinking in terms of athletics. Well, that was all right, but it would have been a very great mistake if I had let that be the deciding factor. However, due to the fact that my mother was a member of the first class that was ever taught at Brigham Young Academy under Dr. Mazur, and was therefore a great fondness the family for the institution, for the fact that my father had graduated from this institution, and that many of my best teachers had come from here, and that I knew about the splendid qualities, I allowed those permanent things to be the deciding factor in deciding come to BYU. And it has always been the right decision. There has never been one time since that I've had any evidence that this was not the best place for me to have come. The days of registration here I remember very vividly. Down in the old educational building, which was the center of everything in campus at that time, President Benjamin Clough greeted me when I came in, and Brother Cope, the registrar, had a few things to say, and there was a certain student, Francis Shelton, who took me around and showed me the things that I didn't know, where the classrooms were and so on, and I've always been grateful to him. And I have remembered that day as one of the red letter days of my life. Now, let's appraise the things that were done then after 50 years of examination. Dr. Middleton, one of the beloved men of this state, wrote a book once, which he titled, After 40 Years. That is, he said that after 40 years, he was giving an appraisal of life And it's a very charming book. I hope all of you will have an opportunity to read. But now, after 50 years, what about this college business? What should one do about it? In those 50 years, about half of the time has been spent at this institution as president of the institution, practically half of it. Another part of the time as professor elsewhere, as director of research elsewhere, as president elsewhere, as an advisor to numerous corporations who could use my particular brand of training, as advisor to a number of foreign governments, as a traveler almost all over the world, and as one who loves his fellow man, and particularly the young people, I believe I have a certain perspective on which I can look at college education, both from the point of view of an educator and from that of an outsider. And as a result of that perspective, I want to put out a few simple general rules. My colleagues on the side here will remember these various years as freshmen came in. I attempted to give them advice in certain lines, and that type of advice is part of the thing that comes to my mind at this time. And I would say that first, if I were to be a college student, if I were to enter college now, as my son were, I would say first, establish a few good habits. Now, habits are really wonderful things on either side of the ledger. A good habit that one gets into helps one to accomplish things without having to decide each individual case on its own merits. You make a general decision about a procedure, and then to carry that out as a matter of habit. So one of the greatest things is to establish a few constructive habits, and on the other hand, to avoid a few habits that if they fasten themselves onto a person, no matter how great his capabilities, they will eventually get him down. What examples I could bring up of some of the most brilliant and promising persons I have known in my life who have, because of circumstances, allowed themselves to have fastened on to them destructive habits, and they have been completely overcome by them. Now, these habits, I'd say first, the health habits. Because after all, health is the most precious thing that you'll have. Not money, not learning, health is first. Because all other good things depend on health. And a young person should first contrive to learn the things and establish the habits that ensure health. There isn't time to go into those things. You pretty much know them. But that is tremendously important. Next, I would put the habit of work. Work as a habit. And it is one of the most delightful and important of all the habits of life. That of being accustomed to engage in a regular activity of work and to enjoy it. Work, of course, has a good deal to do with one's accomplishment in certain lines, the vocation, and along with the habit of work, one must think in terms of getting into the right vocation. A man of sufficient ability and devotion will succeed in any vocation. But after all, it is important to get into the right vocation in order to get an independence, because one of the things greatly to be desired in life is to attain monetary independence. That is, no matter how fine a dancer a boy may be, and how well he knows how to plaster down his hair or tie his formal tie, unless he knows how to make a living for a family, he falls far short of realizing all that life has for him. And one in college should acquire the training, the skills, and the habit of work that will enable him to earn a living and to become independent financially. And in this great country of ours, I believe it's possible for almost any man of normal intelligence and ability to become independent financially for himself and his family. Along with this work, there is something else that's important. That is recreation. All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. One in college should begin to learn the habits of recreation, to choose recreations that will be constructive and not too expensive, and that will be adequate for the situation in which a person finds himself. And well, that is one of the important things to learn. And here comes another associated with it that I want to emphasize, something that was not emphasized in my young days. I was brought up under the dictum of the strenuous life. The days of Theodore Roosevelt, his writing on the strenuous life, and we always lauded the man who would get up early and stay up late and work hard all the time in between. But I've learned a couple of things since then in my going about with great people. And I've learned that the ability to rest is a tremendously important thing in the life of anybody. And the quality of resting. I remember seeing a young fellow I worked with in a case I was on in Idaho who said that his father never gave their family 1 minute of rest. If a boy attempted to rest a minute, his father would say, "For goodness sake, son, can't you find something to do?" Well, my father was a little wiser, and he used to say to us, if we had a rainy day in Canada on our ranch, or if it was bad weather on our ranch in Mexico, both of which places we lived, one time or another, he would say, "Well, the day is worth just as much for us to be resting and reading and studying as it is to be working." And that's a tremendous thing for a person to learn, particularly one who is inclined to be in the center of active work. Now I'm seeing people overcome by the lack of rest. So I want to put that as one of the important things to learn. It's easy, some people think, but it's very important. Now the most important thing for a student, all these are important, but the reason one comes to college is to learn to study and to study. Most people spend a good deal of their studying time in wasteful endeavor. My friend over here, Professor Polson, who's really one of the great men of my acquaintance, can help any of you in saving a lot of your study time by doing it the right way. The thing to do, of course, is first to learn how to read rapidly, because most of us spend most of our study time in reading. Learn to read rapidly, to concentrate deeply during the period of study, and then to rest. There's a certain cycle there of effective study that one should learn. And one should learn not just to learn facts. Having spent more than 3 months of 9 different years in the Orient, I have discovered, I think, that the chief trouble of Oriental education is that the people have dignified learning facts, merely learning facts, and they get to be tremendously expert at it. Some of those Chinese students that I've seen that know more facts and can memorize more things than anyone I've ever seen. But learning facts is really a secondary quality of intellect. It's important. Should know a few facts. Every man should be able to remember his wife's birthday and the day of their wedding. And there are certain other important facts that a person must learn. But facts can be had, most of them, in the encyclopedia. The important thing is to learn to think. And I believe that that is the quality that makes of Americans the capable leaders that they are. I've just come from a couple of years in Persia, where we've had a good many types of scholars to work with. And the Americans are the best of them all because they can think out of difficulty when they come to a situation. They're not dependent on the rule of thumb or the memory. And so I want to emphasize as one of the important things here, the learning to think, to be able to solve problems, to be able to act under all circumstances. Now, the reason for that becomes obvious in connection with certain scholastic adventures. In the old days, they thought that you should learn a trade and certain facts. When I was a boy, that was the thing that people thought of. Learn a particular trade and a few facts. But when I tell you that when I entered college at BYU 50 years ago, I had never ridden in an automobile because there weren't many to be had on the way from Mexico to here in El Paso, Texas. We were going along San Antonio Street, And an automobile came along the road, and the man that was with me, a boy, says, look, 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 look. That is, he was almost like a chicken clucking. Want to look at that wagon that would go without a horse. Well, all the automobiles have been developed, practically all of them, since we were here. The first automobile ride that my wife and I ever took was in Winnipeg, Canada, on our way east to study. So all the automobiles have developed since I was a freshman student. The moving pictures have all developed. It's true that Phil Hurst of Mexico, in the town that I lived in, had been out to St. Louis and had, between the acts of a play, they'd thrown on a screen a horse race and a prize fight. And he came home and told about it. And all of the people said, well, Phil, you're just a little bit out. There couldn't be such a thing as a picture movie. Well, all the moving pictures have developed since that time. All of the radios. There were no radios in the world when I was a student at Brigham Young University. And it was not till after I became president of Brigham Young University that I had the first radio that was made specially for me in those days when they made it out of crystals and cat whiskers, as they called it. There were no airplanes in the world. There was no knowledge of anything pertaining to electronics. All those things have developed. Now people who are educated just for facts in a particular trade would be unable to meet the situations of a new world that has developed. I'm not a prophet or a son of a prophet, but I will predict that in the next 50 years, there will be actually more new things, new tricks, new things about the world developed than there have been in the last 50 years. And so it's important to get fundamental training and ability to think so that you can adjust to these particular things. Now, along with those things, I want to emphasize the importance of learning to write. We'll all learn to read, but my contacts with various commercial and governmental enterprises, as one who has used many engineers and people of that kind, I find that most young men who study engineering learn enough about the engineering, they're not short in that, but they're helpless in writing up the reports. And the same applies to people in all activities. So I want to particularly emphasize your getting in touch with Oliver Smith over here, somebody that'll teach you how to write, because that is a tremendously important thing no matter what activity you're in. Now, as to subject matter, I see I only have a minute or two left. And here I have the most important of all the subjects in the world to talk about. All these subjects of chemistry and algebra and physics and English, how many of those I have taught in my youth. The most important of all of them is the subject of religion and spirituality. Because spirituality in the development of a personality is more important than the learning of facts. There are more books published on religion than on any other subject. And there are more conversations spoken on religion. If I had time, I could speak for many hours of tremendously interesting experiences I have had on religious topics, because wherever I've been in the world, somehow people have learned that I was a Mormon, and that brings up the subject of religion, and people are interested in the subject of religion. And so I would say that a student should take every opportunity he can for religious activity, because that tends to promote spirituality. Now, the religious activity, the so-called routines, may not be so important, but the spirituality behind it all is tremendously important. I could tell you about some of the ritualistic rites I have seen in various places where people thought they were religious, but they're merely engaging in the busy work associated with religion. The thing to be sought is spirituality. So that now, in summing up, I see the clock has gone past my time. If I were to be a student, knowing all that I know now, I would seek to establish habits in health, in work, in recreation, in rest. I'd learn how to study, and I would try to develop my spirituality. And if I had all of those things, I would be able to live a life of appreciation of some of the things that I have on my list and would have told you about if it had been time. I've thoroughly enjoyed being here with you today.